You're listening to the Dr. Nina Show with Dr. Nina Savelle Rocklin, only on LA Talk Radio.
Hey there, welcome to the Dr. Nina Show here on LA Talk Radio and Instagram. I am your host, Dr. Nina Savelle Rocklin, and I am here to help you break free from body shame, binging, and diets that don't work. I want you to wake up and think about your day, not your diet. And by the way, if you love the show, please take a moment to head over to Apple Podcasts and leave a rating or a comment. The more that we get, the more we show up on feeds and searches, and the more I can help people. So yay. So thank you in advance. I really appreciate it. And if you would like to join me today, the call-in number is 323-203-0815. 323-203-0815. I would love to hear what is on your mind, what is weighing on you, because the real problem with binge eating, stress eating, any kind of emotional eating, the real problem is not food. The real problem is not what you're eating. It is what's eating at you. So one question I get a lot is about sugar addiction. And, you know, sugar is a topic that has been portraying sugar as more addictive than heroin. Sugar is evil. Sugar is the root of all evil. Okay, I slightly exaggerate. But here's the thing. There is no such thing as sugar addiction. That's right. It may feel like there is, but there actually isn't a true physiological addiction to sugar. So the traditional, just a little backstory, I'll make it as brief as possible. So the traditional understanding of addiction is that it has to do with the compulsive use, usually of a substance known to the user to be harmful. And usually there's increased tolerance to that substance. So it takes more and more to get the same result, the same high. And stopping the use of that. So the concept of building tolerance only applies to certain drugs that in which people actually build physical dependency. There is no such thing as building a tolerance to food, including sugar. So many people who feel powerless over sugar or white flour or carbs or whatever it is that you feel addicted to, and I know the feeling feels very, very real. They find it, people who call themselves food addicts find it really hard to grapple with what they consider their addiction. They say, look, you know what, if you're an alcoholic, you can stay away from alcohol. If you are addicted to cigarettes, you can stop smoking. If you are addicted to coffee, you can stop drinking coffee. But they say, oh, but I can't stop eating food, right? Can't stop eating food. We need to eat to live. So also, you know, people say, oh, temptation is everywhere. In our homes, when we're out in restaurants, even at the gas station, yeah, those little mini marts, it's everywhere. But is food addiction real? No. So some studies make the case for the reward theory of food addiction. They say certain types of food are associated with increased dopamine levels. Dopamine is the chemical that mediates pleasure in our brains. Note brains. I'll get to that in a second. And the theory is that that sugar and other kinds of hyper-palatable foods like simple carbs and all of that, they activate the release of dopamine in the brain. Eat some sugary or fatty or lean rush. I think that's why they called it dope back in the day. So food addiction theory points to changes in our brains as evidence of substance addiction to food. Sounds reasonable, right? But wait, there is more to the story. So sugar does change our brains. It absolutely does, no question. However, Lots of things affect our brains the same way. Any activity involving pleasure affects our brains and gives us a dopamine rush, including, yes, sugar. So does sex. So does exercise. So does playing sports. So does playing video games. So does spending time with your friends. So does doing anything that you enjoy. One study, check this out. This is so interesting. One study showed that listening to music specifically had the same impact on the brain as cocaine, right? And psychotherapy also changes our brains and can be more effective than medication in the long run. So, relationships with people change our brains. Look, anything that's fun changes our brains. So, keep that in mind, and that if you're just looking at changes in our brains as evidence for sugar addiction, no, there's a lot more to it. Now, what about the studies? This is the question. At this point, this is the question I always get. But what about that study that showed that rats, when given the choice between heroin and sugar, they chose sugar? So see, sugar is more addictive than heroin. Again, no. Lab rats will go, any rat will go for sugar every time, of course, but not because sugar is more addictive than heroin. Rats are not motivated by getting high.
Hello?
Rats aren't like, oh, I really want to get a buzz. You know, or I guess heroin doesn't give you a buzz, but whatever heroin gives you, they don't want it. Rats are motivated by... Nicole, hold on. Let me finish this. Rats are motivated by survival. Rats are motivated by survival, not by getting high. So, of course, rats are going to choose sugar. So that is really just a misleading kind of conclusion to come from, to come to. Okay, I will continue with this in a little bit. Nicole, welcome back to the show.
Hi. Thanks. It's so interesting that you're talking about this today, because I was saying something last night about like, oh shit, I need to go on a sugar detox. And then I turn on the show. And
I hope you caught yourself saying that. Yeah.
So, you know, it's just making me think again, it's not what you're eating. So it's not what I'm eating. It's not the sugar. It really just is what's eating at me maybe. And like sugar is not bad and everything in moderation is okay. But I guess my question is the addiction part, or like that part, the center, the part in the brain, like the pleasure center, the part you're talking, the dopamine or whatever, like how do you stop that? Is it just figuring out what's eating at you and why I'm looking for that constant dopamine rush? And like, is that a bad thing?
That's a great question. So remember that we have brains, but we also have minds. So we're kind of being told by the idea that there's sugar addiction, that we're just a bunch of brains walking around going like zombies going for sugar. And it may feel that way, but we're not. Think of it, if we're going to use the word addiction, which I don't really love that word addiction, I find it very pathologizing. Think of it as an eating addiction, that you are addicted, quote unquote, to using food to resolve something emotional. So to answer your question, I think in the moment you want to look at, well, why are you suddenly thinking about sugar? What is it doing for you? What is it taking you away from? And by the way, we usually don't eat tablespoons of sugar, right? If we were addicted to sugar, it would like, oh, let me eat tablespoons of sugar. But we don't do that. We eat it in the form of different things. So is that sugar in the form of ice cream? That's associated with fruit. That's something different. So, you know, is it, you know, look at what it is and what's going on in your life that's making you want to turn to sugar. Consider if you have enough sweetness in your life. Because sometimes when we don't have enough sweetness in our lives, food becomes fun.
Yeah. I thought about all of these things already. And I know that like the other day I had a really bad headache And I started eating these really delicious cookies that reminded me of childhood, just to like, not that cookies help your headache go away. And it made me think, like, when you're tired, what do you need? You need rest. So rest. So I'm like, okay, I have a headache. What do I need to fix the headache? Like, maybe I should take some Advil or figure out why I have a headache instead of eating cookies. But like, the cookies just made me feel better. So I don't know. Maybe I thought about food mood formula, and I'm like, why am I craving, you know, this Halo Top ice cream and cookies and candy and all this stuff? And I'm like, well, do I have enough sweetness in my life? Maybe I'm not having enough fun. Maybe I need to have more fun. You know, I thought about all these things, but there wasn't there was an awareness, but the action part is okay, now what? Like, okay, I'm aware, but now what? Like, now what do I do? Like, then I got stuck a little. Like,
okay, so partly that, so good, you're so aware. I mean, my goodness, what awareness that you had, like, sort of in the moment to catch yourself and ask yourself these questions. That's wonderful. You also had a little bit of a clue there. You said the cookies reminded you of childhood. Well, when you say that,
right,
what about childhood are you what's it being?
Right. It actually wasn't the best thing, because I feel like I liked these cookies so much when I was younger at home. And it's like this cookie, and then there's like jelly and nuts on top. And I didn't like the jelly and nuts part, so I would take the jelly and nuts off and just eat the cookie part. And my mom would get really mad that I like messed up all the cookies, because I would like dissect them. And I was like, yeah, I could buy these and do whatever the hell I want with them this time.
Okay,
and no one can tell me what to do. And I don't know. But I also remember really liking them and wanting to eat them all, because they're so yummy.
Well, and you were also deprived. And what we are deprived, when we're deprived, when we're told we can't have something, we naturally want it more.
Yeah.
That's why dieting always leads to overeating or binging. And that's why there's a diet binge cycle. So the app you take is, hey, you need some comfort, some rest, some, you know, what did you need physically, but what did you need emotionally when you had that headache?
What did I need emotionally?
Yeah. Did you need someone, maybe from yourself or someone else, to say, oh, you don't feel well, I'm so sorry, that it's not going to last, what do you need right now? Let me help.
Yeah. Well, I mean, my husband was sweet, and he's like, well, go to the spa, like, go get a massage, go relax, maybe you need to sauna and steam. So, like, I feel like emotionally I did get what I think I was being compassionate, and I'm like, okay, I'm grateful that I don't need to, like, do anything this moment, and I could just, like, take care of myself. But I went to the chiropractor, and it was fine.
Nicole?
I guess I could have done that step sooner, because, yeah, sorry.
Nope. You did not get what you needed. You needed comfort, and he attended to your body. He said, go to the sauna, go to the spa, go to the chiropractor, go do something with your body, go do something. Nothing wrong with that, but I don't think that's what you needed. I think what you needed is, oh, babe, I'm sorry. You know, I hope it goes away soon. Let me give you a hug. You need some, like, a cold press.
Right.
I think that's more what you were looking for. Not that I'm a mind reader, but let me just rephrase that. If it were me, that's what I would want. I wouldn't want someone to say, okay, here's what you can do about that headache. Now go around and do all this stuff. I'd want,
Yeah, I see that. I see what you mean. Just kind of an acknowledgement of, like, I'm sorry you're not feeling well. Not like solution. Not like solution,
exactly.
But kind of just like acknowledging the feeling and, like, comforting that part, like the inner child or whatever.
Just the, not inner child, the person who has a feeling.
Like a feeling.
Feelings are not the person who have childhood.
Yeah.
Like when we need comfort, that's not us being childish. That's us being human.
Yeah, I like that. That makes sense. Can I ask about one more thing now that I have you
on
the phone?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. I don't even know how to, I, I know this one's kind of complicated, not complicated, but so I think similar to many, maybe some people can relate to me. I've never really been a drinker, but through the pandemic, I feel like wine started to come out of me. I started drinking wine almost every night, you know, kind of like put music on, start cooking, pour myself a glass of wine, and kind of turned into excessive. And so long story short, I just feel like it's all related in this. Well, long story short, I feel like alcohol in some situations cannot be like, are not good for me specifically. And so related to like the addiction and the dopamine in the brain and all that stuff. And then I guess, what am I trying to ask? I'm trying to ask. So I'm stuck.
Okay. Can I help you out? Forget the dopamine and the brain.
Yeah.
Let's talk about the mind and needs and wants and feelings. And like, so you're using wine in a way to cope. Right. So you were using wine, kind of, perhaps the way you might have been using
food. Kind of like food. Yeah. And so And so my husband got frustrated with me that like sometimes meat and wine equals no good. And so basically he said to me, put a demand on me that I should not drink for 6 months. And to me, that feels like, you know, when you're on a diet and someone's saying no pasta, no bread, no chocolate, no sugar, like, you know, it feels like a diet. And I don't really, I don't respond very well to that because it makes me want it more. Just like you were talking about the sugar. And when someone says no sugar, like you're craving, you have a bigger craving. And so I can do right now to kind of use it as an opportunity to learn about myself and kind of just, because the end goal is I do want to have a healthy relationship with alcohol, and I actually really do enjoy a glass of wine, and I want to be able to have it and not abuse it and all those things, but it just feels so similar to the food stuff, which is a sensitive, spot. So I'm just really struggling.
Yes. So Nicole, first of all, I think your husband made a demand for you to stop drinking wine for 6 months, but you know what? You're a grown woman, so you get to decide if that works for you or not.
Yes.
Secondly,
yes.
Agreed that it's like plucking the weed and just saying, well, it's not going to grow back if I just pluck this weed. No, you got to get to the root. So, so again, just as food is the problem, it is wine is not the problem. It is the solution to the problem. What's the problem? So, what did it do for you? Did it help you relax? Did it take your mind off things? Like, figure out what it does for you, and address that instead of looking at it as the problem.
For sure, that makes sense. And so I think by removing it and like working on myself to figuring out the root problem, I'm trying to achieve exactly that. But so I think you're right, and I thank you for validating that and confirming that that is what I need to do. Do you think it needs to be removed altogether?
No, I
guess?
Don't.
No.
I think, you know, because how do you ever look at what people do when they go out? Many years to some Greek restaurant and you just couldn't stop eating it. Why? Because
I remember
delicious. I remember that, and because it was delicious, and you were eating all kinds of rabbit food, like really boring, healthy, boring, awful food. So the second you had the chance to eat something yummy, you couldn't stop eating it. Understandable.
Yeah.
So depriving yourself doesn't help you learn why you want to drink wine. And it doesn't help you regulate.
Right.
It just makes you want more of it. And it puts the focus on wine instead of on you. Just like it's not what you're eating, it's what's eating at you. It's not what you're drinking you know, given what you're talking about, it's what is, you know, there's no correlation. There's no direct.
Yeah,
like,
I know what you mean.
It's what's eating at you.
It's the same thing.
It's not what you're drinking, is what's eating at you. So to be able to recognize that, the second you put these like wine diet or food diet or restrictions, you know, no, it's, that's, I don't think so. I think you could do what people do, which is like, oh, I only drink on the weekends or things like that.
Right.
Like, figure out what works for you. But this total restriction is going to backfire.
Right. And then do you think there's also a correlation? Like, do you think there's an addiction? Like, what am I trying to ask now? So that's all really clear. Last part is just like the addiction part. Do you think it's just going from like one addiction to another addiction, like food, like just, it actually sounds like different coping mechanisms, different things to cope, whether it's alcohol, whether it's whatever it is.
Yeah, that's a very good question, Nicole. And what you're talking about are called cross addictions. And there are jokes about people who are in AA and they become addicted to, quote unquote, to AA meetings, or they're addicted to coffee and cigarettes, or they're, you know, that so they resolve it in one area, but they just transfer it to a different kind of behavior. So in that case, it's very good that you're recognizing that. And it's again, it's what is the root issue that is causing you to choose this behavior or that behavior, whether it's with food or wine, or, you know, often I find with
food,
with shopping. I mean, there's so many different ways that people cope. So what are you coping with is the question. And when you get to that, what is it you can be at the moment? And you also want to make sure that you're not choosing it out of deprivation. Deprivation or not having enough or not having any makes people want more. So there's that part of it as well.
And how do I explain this to my husband?
Give him my book, The Binge Cure, and have him read just the chapter on why diets don't work, and say, hey, that pertains to everything.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you so much.
Or you can just use words and say, hey, look, this is what I realize. This is what I'm contending with. I want to figure out what's going on with me that's making me choose these ways of coping, instead of focusing on the coping mechanisms as the problem. Whether it's wine for you, it helps you in some way, but it also, of course, hurts you.
Thank you. Makes a lot of sense.
You got this, Nicole. You are very aware, and just check in with yourself. What do I need? What am I feeling?
Okay.
What do I not want to look at? It's hard.
Yeah,
about that.
What do I want to not look at? Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome. Bye. Good
talk
to hear
soon.
From you.
Bye. Bye.
Josh is saying if you're restricting your diet, there's going to be another area of restriction: money, sex, shopping. Sometimes when you restrict your diet, I've treated people who had very anorexic, restrictive behaviors, but they would binge on other things. Everyone is different. Everyone has his or her own individual reasons for why they develop these coping strategies. So, you know, just look at what is the answer for you. How did you come to feel this way? What's going on with you, as opposed to this generalized everybody? Because there is no everybody. There's just an individual, an individual, an individual. So I was saying, remember that we have brains, but we also have minds. So our brains are the physical control of our bodies. They don't operate without the power of our minds, and our minds actually don't operate without the power of our brains. They're interconnected. But when you only when you only focus on what you're doing your minds, as and that is also affected by culture and society, you know, so many different things. So a good example is one of my patients who said to me, sugar is my personal crack. Can you relate? Who can relate? Wave a hand. Wave a hand on Instagram if you can relate. So again, science doesn't matter if you feel like you are totally addicted to sugar or whatever. And my patient, I call her Annette. That is not her real name. She did say to me, sugar is my personal crack. And she said that when she would bake cookies with her daughter, she would feel this pull towards this chocolate chip cookie dough so intense that she would have to make up excuses to send her kid out of the room so she could like eat a bunch of cookie dough. And sometimes, you know, she'd eat so much of it, she'd have to pretend that she knocked over the bowl and it spilled and she put it down the garbage disposal. I mean, she had all these very creative ways of explaining what happened with the cookie dough. So she felt like a crazy addict who needed a sugar fix. So what was going on in her life? She was going through a difficult divorce. She was stuck in a very unsatisfying job. And so sugary foods provided comfort and distracted her from these problems. She didn't have enough sweetness in her life, as I was saying to Nicole. Look at whether, you know, where do you need sweetness in your life? Sometimes people are so entrenched in like producing and accomplishing and doing more. They forget to have fun, and then food becomes fun. So for Annette, her number one source of fun was food. The more fun we have, the less we need food for fun. And Annette, here's what happened. She finalized her divorce. She changed her job. She took up some new hobbies. And baking cookies became something fun that she did with her daughter instead of something where she felt completely powerless over sugar. She no longer felt like sugar was her personal crack. And eventually, she could have some of the batter and she could have one or two cookies and be fine. Now, if I had told Annette, like, hey, there's going to come a day when you are not sending your kid out of the room so you can scarf a bunch of cookie dough and then lie about it. In fact, you're going to be able to have a little bit, not worry about it. You're going to be able to have one or two cookies or even three if you want, you know. And it's not going to be a big deal and you're not going to feel bad about yourself. She would have looked at me like I had completely lost my mind, like I was on crack. That's how she would have looked at me. So how was it possible for Annette, the self-proclaimed sugar addict, to eat just one cookie? Because it wasn't about the impact of sugar on her brain. When she stopped using food for fun and comfort, she could eat anything in moderation. And that had to do with her mind. So powerful. So the feeling of being addicted to food is more psychological often. Always than physiological. So if you have sudden cravings for food that you know are unhealthy, there's always a reason. Something is going on. And when you recognize the true triggers, which have nothing to do with the substance of sugar, then you can master that addictive behavior. So I also had talked about Danielle, who, not her real name, who felt like she was addicted to Doritos. And it's very interesting, Nicole's explanation of you know, what her husband had told her, because here's Danielle's situation was she and her husband had decided to not watch TV for like a year. They went on a TV diet. And, well, he thought she was on board with this idea. She was not on board with this idea, but I'm getting ahead of myself. Every night they would read books. So they're reading their books, you know, because they're improving their minds instead of mindlessly watching TV. That was the point. And so, and she would just be pulled toward the kitchen, toward the pantry. Doritos. She'd read a few pages and then it was like, oh, I need some Doritos. So what was happening? Well, if you know my food mood formula, burritos are associated for annoyance, irritation, rage. The truth was that Danielle did not want to read books for a year and improve her mind. Danielle wanted to Netflix and chill. That's what she wanted to do. But she felt as if she had to be supportive of her husband because her mother was a traditional mother who gave in to her father, whatever. So she thought that she had to be supportive, and she basically had no choice. And so she was kind of like expressing her frustration and her anger and her resentment through Doritos. She was getting mad at herself for eating Doritos instead of getting upset with her husband for kind of imposing this TV diet on her. And when she talked to her husband, who was so surprised, he thought she was completely on board with this, with him. When she talked with her husband about it, they devised a compromise. Imagine. So they would do 4 days Netflix, 3 days reading, 4 days reading, 3 days Netflix. And they made it work. And guess what? She stopped binging on family size bags of Doritos. So, the first step to reclaiming your power over food is to identify what's going inside your head. What is going on in your head and your heart? If you are turning to food, it is not because your brain has formed a physical addiction to it. No, it is because your mind is looking for a way to feel better. Your mind is looking for a way to comfort yourself, distract yourself, express yourself. And, even if you automatically eat when you're upset, you can learn to identify what's going on and start to implement some changes. And when you implement those new ways of being with yourself, the way you talk to yourself, the tone you use when you talk to yourself, as well as the words you use when you talk with yourself, everything changes. So it takes time, but it is possible if you put your mind to it. Not your brain, your mind. Okay, so if you would like to join me, the number is 323-203-0815. I would love to hear what is on your mind, what is eating at you, and help you get to those roots that I'm talking about. Here's why I like that weed root analogy so much. If we look at the weeds as behavior and the roots as what drives the behavior, the roots are underground. We don't see roots. We can't see them. They're underground. We only discern them because they're growing weeds. Same with behavior. We see the behavior, but the behavior comes from someplace, and the unconscious mind, these are ideas, thoughts, beliefs, things that are hidden from us in our unconscious mind. We are in the dark about it, but they are so much affecting what we do and why we do it. And so that's my little spiel on the weed root analogy. Okay, so now questions. I have compiled a lot of questions that people have asked me.
Hello.
Mindfulness meditation for binge eating and overeating, it's not working for me. Why not? Okay, so first of all, let's make a distinction between binge eating and overeating. So everyone overeats at some time. Overeating just means you have too much and you're hungry, either you like what you were eating, so you had a little bit too much, or you were so hungry that you ate a lot before you even realized that you were satiated. Oh, Carly Gash, hold on. Everybody overeats. And when you overeat, you say, okay, I just had a little bit too much of that. Oh, well, whatever. I'll just cut back tomorrow or later. Binge eating is when you are compulsively eating large quantities of food, often in a short amount of time. Oh, Carly Gash, I see you. I'm just going to finish this and I'll be right with you. And it is accompanied by a sense of shame. So binge eating is, oh, I don't like that I did that. I mean, overeating is, I don't like that I did that. Binge eating is, oh, I hate myself because I did that. It is filled with shame and regret and self-recrimination. More later. Hi, Carly Gash. Wait, hold on, Carly Gash. I'm here. Carly Gash, are you there?
Yes. Hi, Dr. Nina. Do you hear me?
I hear you. What's going on?
I was listening to your radio, this today's show. It was so good. And then you said, give me a call. And I was like, I'm going to call him what I'm going to talk about. I'm like, my first thought was like, it's not that bad. Like, it seems like, but the thing, like, I'm just so angry that I cannot even put my mind. I woke up like 5:30 a.m. I still cannot work. It's already 12. So yesterday I was like really fighting with my mom. And what I want to talk about that I am so tired.
That you are
in
so
my
what?
Country, you never, huh?
I'm sorry, your words are getting a little, you want to talk about that you are so what?
Tired.
Tired. Are yes. you talking about physically being tired, or are you talking about being fed up?
No,
I'm
fed up. I'm fed up by being responsible for her, by kind of babysitting, being pretty much being a mother to her.
You know, it's really hard to be a mother. Your parents called up when they have not been the parent you need to you. So, Carly Gash, I'm going to help you out. You know, on page 45 of my book, Give Anger a Voice, I'm going to give you some prompts, and I want you to finish them. Ready? Ready for it?
Yeah.
Okay. I'm going to start. Normally, I start small, like less intensity and build up, but I'm going to go in big and we'll get to lesser intensity. I can't talk today. What's going on? Okay. So finish the sentence. However, whatever comes to mind first, don't even think about it too much. I'm enraged.
I'm enraged because my mom, she doesn't give a fuck about my time investment.
I'm furious.
I teach stuff, but she like either forgets or neglects. She still does her thing.
I'm furious.
I'm furious because she refuses to do the things, like regular things, which keep, like basics of life, which are the things which supposed to keep her alive and like keep her disease regulated.
I'm angry.
Basically, I'm angry that she's irresponsible.
I resent.
I resent just the whole idea of having her as my mom. I like it.
Carly Gash, I'm having a little trouble hearing you. Can you say that again? Maybe your mouth is too close to the phone or something. It's getting a little garbled.
I said, I resent the whole idea of having her as my mother, as my mom. I don't like it. It doesn't feel good.
I'm irritated.
I'm irritated that after her talking to her, my whole world is like shaking. I am shaking. I cannot smile. I cannot do my stuff. I cannot be myself. It's like, you know, like stepping into her world and like being infected by that depression and all this awfulness, and just boiling that couple of days when I get better, it starts again.
I'm annoyed.
I'm annoyed that I cannot do anything about it. If she was in America, you know, here there is a good system which takes care of elderly. But over there, I need to take care of her, and I can't delegate it. I cannot outsource it. I just cannot do anything about it, but just keep being a parentified child since I was like 8 years old.
And last, I'm frustrated. And by the way, I know you've said that your mother is like 60 or 61 years old. That's not elderly. So you have this 60 or 61 year old person who's, you know, well, in the United States, that's practically middle-aged.
Not in our country. It's like 91, 60 Europeans of living there are incomparable to Americans. So people wore out and got old and unhealthy earlier.
Okay.
Just because the life is so hard.
Okay. And last, I'm frustrated.
I'm frustrated that nobody can understand me. I don't have anyone who has more or less same history and who I can share this with. Immigrants from my country, they still have this cult of adoring and cherishing their parents and like saying, "Mom, thank you for giving me life." I do say that, but I also have like hard feelings.
Okay, or, what do you notice about starting off with rage and going down to, you know, frustration, aggravation? I think that underneath the rage is a lot of hurt. And I could hear it in your voice. You know, you are angry, of course, but there's also such a hurt and such pain and such an emptiness and a longing that comes through for this mother who isn't a mother.
I am hurt, Dr. Nina, but I'm tired of my own hurt and pain. I cannot do anything about it. It just sucks.
Yes, you can. Yes, you can. You can respond to yourself differently. You can be to yourself what you needed from her. You can comfort yourself with words instead of food. You could be your own best friend. You could take your own side. You can encourage yourself and soothe yourself with words instead of food.
Okay. Okay.
Food, why do we turn to food? Because food, you know, as you know, but food, our first experience of being fed is bound with the experience of our mother, usually, sometimes a father. So who holds us and keeps us, makes us feel safe and secure and warm and in a and connected and in this blissful space. And that's connected with the experience of being fed. So on some level, when we don't get mothering or parenting or love, we use food as a substitute. But you have to give you don't give your mother food. You give her your words. Give yourself words. You encourage her, you support her with words, give yourself those words.
I like that.
As if she's interested in change, you can benefit from you being mothering and supportive and encouraging to yourself.
Thank you, Dr. Nina. I like it. You taught me to. I kind of stopped recently supporting other people. You know, I've been doing it my whole life, being parentified child to my mother and doing the same for others, but not supporting myself. So I kind of learned, you taught me and I worked hard and I learned. I almost stopped encouraging others. Still there, but huge difference. Notice when I go into that mode, supporting somebody else and building their life, I stop myself and say, how about I'd rather help myself or like at least stop here. But never, and now I see that I think the biggest support and the most resource, my whole resources, I'm like pouring into my mom. And maybe I should be helping myself as relentlessly and selflessly as I do it for her.
Yes. Me. Yes, yes, yes. Give yourself what the support you need, because right now you're tired and fed up because you're giving all your resources to her, but she's like a funnel. It goes in and then it comes out. You take care of your mom, and food is, listen to me. You are taking care of your mom, and food is taking care of you. So food, which represents mothering, is taking care of you. It's time for you to put, to give the resources.
Okay. But I have one progress, Dr. Nina. Before, I used to feel very guilty that I live here in America. I have money and I have good food. And my mom was struggling there. Like, you know, I couldn't eat. I used to buy myself nice food. I would feel guilty eating nice food. So I have progress. Yesterday I was like fighting with her, and I was eating tempura shrimp, dipping it, shouting and enjoying it. So at least I have this win, which is a progress in this, my relationships to her, which is very, very hard for me. But this small win for me means a lot. Yes, I've been binging yesterday. And like you say, Dr. Nina, today everything hurts. Haven't been since March. And like you say, I was trying to process emotional pain by stuffing myself, and now I'm in physical pain. And like you said, under all this anger, it's hurt.
Yes. Feel it in your heart instead of your body. You've turned emotional pain to physical pain. You have to get in touch with that emotional pain, which that needs your attention. And when you're there for yourself and you help yourself through that, you don't need food for that purpose. You don't need food as a symbolic substitute. You don't need it as a way of expressing what to yourself, what you can't to her, all of that. So you're doing a great job of reflecting. Now take the step of thinking about how you're going to show up for yourself and take your own side. That's powerful. Be nice to yourself, Carly Gash. You deserve it.
Okay.
Okay.
Thank you, Dr. Lina. Have a good day.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Yeah. You know, if you're turning to food, or if you're doing, or wine, if you're doing something you don't want to do, there is always a reason. And if you're not doing something you want to do, there is always a reason for that too. The idea is to get very curious about what that is. And often people say, well, how do I know what's going on with me? Because I turn to food so quickly. I don't even know what's going on with me. That's why I created my food mood formula. You can get it free on my website, Dr. Nina Inc., drninainc.com. Or if you're on Instagram, you get it. My link in my bio. Find out what it is that is motivating some of your behavior with food, because you don't understand it. That food mood formula guide is going to help you out. So thank you so much for joining me today. Hi, Hillary. Thank you so much for joining me today. I am here every Wednesday at 11 a.m. Pacific. You can also listen later on LA Talk Radio, the Dr. Nina Show on LA Talk Radio on Apple Podcasts. That is a mouthful. I will say it again. You can listen later on the Dr. Nina Show on LA Talk Radio. That's the name, on Apple Podcasts. And if you have any questions for me, if there's anything you want me to cover in the show, feel free to DM me or email me. I am happy to help. I want you to know there is hope. You don't have to live this way forever. There is a way out. Have a wonderful day, a wonderful week, everyone. Be kind to yourself. Be curious, not critical. I'll see you next week. Bye for now.
You're listening to The Dr. Nina Show with Dr. Nina Savelle-Rocklin, only on LA Talk Radio.